Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin in a moment with former Secretary of Labor and current Professor of Public Policy at the University of California, Berkeley, Robert Reich. He joins us to discuss the economic hostage crisis situation going on in Washington, D.C., as the full faith and credit of the United States is subject to blackmail and reckless brinkmanship, while economic recovery and creating jobs takes a back seat to the so-called deficit and debt crisis. Then Jeff Madrick, the author of a new book, Age of Greed, The Triumph of Finance and the Decline of America, joins us. He is an economic policy consultant and analyst, and will explain the dismal economic trajectory we are on and how we got there. Then finally, with South Sudan now officially the world's 193rd nation, we will speak with author and journalist Rebecca Hamilton, who has just returned from the war front at the dividing line between North and South Sudan. She will give us an update on the reality on the ground, far from the lofty pronouncements in the United Nations Security Council, as this new nation, born out of war, faces an uncertain future. I'm now joined by Robert Reich, author of the new book, Aftershock, The Next Economy and America's Future. He has served in three national administrations, most recently as Secretary of Labor under President Bill Clinton. He is the Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at the University of California at Berkeley. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Reich.
Hi, Ian.
And as I mentioned in the opening, here we are in an economic hostage crisis situation going on in Washington, D.C., as the full faith and credit of the United States is subject to blackmail and reckless brinkmanship, while economic recovery and creating jobs takes a back seat to the so-called deficit and debt crisis. Talk about aftershock. I mean, I can't believe this.
Well, you can't believe it. I can't believe it. I think most Americans are in absolute well, either worried or in awe of what's happening. I mean, the Washington has grind to a complete halt in the worst possible way. Most Americans desperately need some bold action on the jobs front. No jobs are being created. Essentially, 18,000 new jobs in June, when you consider the size of the jobs problem, is nothing. We need a jobs plan. We need the president and Congress to be working on jobs and wages to get the economy going again. And here we have a breakdown over an issue that should be a technical matter. Raising the debt limit is something that Congresses do routinely. The economy grows. The debt naturally, inevitably, is going to grow somewhat, whether you have a long-term debt problem or not. And we do have to get on with some sort of long-term deficit plan. That's true. But now is not the time to stop the government and disturb and possibly threaten the full faith and credit of the United States when we've got such a jobs crisis in front of us.
Well, in your recent article in the Huffington Post, Robert Reich, you say that Mitch McConnell, the Republican Senate leader, like most other Republican leaders, has all along seen the battle over raising the debt ceiling as part of a master plan to unseat Obama. And you recall, of course, his famous statement that his top goal is to defeat President Obama in 2012. He just reiterated that with Laura Ingraham on a radio show, and even went further in his determination. And he's saying, we're not going to help Obama out of this mess. Well, they put him in this situation. I don't know why Obama allowed himself to get in this situation. This is an entirely artificial crisis. In a way, my question to you, Professor Reich, is, power is what you give to others. Why did he buy into this narrative?
I have no idea. In fact, what he's done essentially is to indirectly legitimize the Republican narrative that the budget deficit is our largest national problem, and that somehow if you get control over the deficit, we will get the economy going again. Nothing could be further from the truth. The vast majority of economists, of policy analysts, people who understand the American economy, understand that the problem right now is that consumers are so scared, and with good reason. They are scared of losing their jobs, their wages are declining, that they are not buying. Purchasing power is dropping. And if they're not buying, then obviously businesses are not hiring. And if businesses are not hiring, we just find ourselves in a vicious cycle. The only way out of this is for government to boost what's called technically in aggregate demand. I mean, we're talking about boosting the purchasing power of people by I've come up with several ideas. I don't claim that they are necessarily the only ideas or the best ideas, but government has got to act. We've seen in the past, every time we've had a recession, every time we've had a depression, every time we've had this degree of pain and misery and hardship that the American people have endured, government has got to be there for them. This is what this is the American tradition, and the president should never have allowed the Republicans to be in the position of extorting, and it is extortion, this kind of a lack of action.
Again, I'm speaking with Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor and now Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at the University of California at Berkeley. You served longer than anybody else in Bill Clinton's cabinet, so you've spent some time, obviously, in Washington. I can't understand, though, how that the culture in Washington doesn't understand, and I think this is both largely with the Republicans, but I think the Democrats share some blame here. They don't seem to understand the pain that's out there with the joblessness and the uncertainty of the economy and the downsizing of a lot of people's lives and the foundation of this country's American dream and meritocracy in jeopardy. They seem to be in their own world, and let's face it, they've all got jobs. And, you know, you read about Ryan, who wants to take Medicare away from seniors, in Politico, having these lunches with lobbyists with $350 bottles of wine. What's going on there? I mean, don't they get it?
I think what's going on, Ian, is that Washington has become its own vicious, very partisan echo chamber in which small tactical victories or losses become the issue of the day. The Washington media exaggerates all of these tactical maneuvers, and Washington itself is deluged with money. Campaign money, lobbyist money, most of it coming from big business executives, from Wall Street and Wall Street executives. And so you get a tremendous distortion, a kind of out of touch with the rest of the country, with main streets, with average working people, who in turn feel completely turned off, cynical. They don't feel that they're being listened to. They say, why bother? Which is itself a self-fulfilling prophecy, because if most average people say, why bother, I don't have anything to do with this government, then they, in effect, cede control over the government to the very forces that don't care about them.
Well, Professor Reich, it's clear at this point that politics have overwhelmed economics, and I'm astounded equally that the president in his recent press conference said that once we make this big fix, we can get back to doing jobs. Well, that seems to me he's got it backwards there. But if we are in a situation where politics are dictating the situation, and it does seem that the Republicans might have a strategy to win with a bad economy, and the Democrats, if the economy is wrecked, they're the ones that will be stuck with the wreckage. So do you think that if the president can call their bluff to the point where it seems that he's maneuvering them and they're trying to maneuver themselves, each side seems to be painting themselves into a corner here, but the notion is that at the end of the day, who gets blamed for the debt crisis and the resulting damage to the economy, no matter what, who gets blamed? If the Republicans get blamed, the president's going to be stuck with it, and he's going to be stuck with it for a whole year.
You see, I think the sad reality, Ian, and I say this advisedly, I don't say this carelessly, is that many Republicans, if not most Republicans in Congress, don't mind a very bad economy going into an election year, because people will blame the president. And Americans traditionally toss presidents out of their jobs when the economy is terribly bad. And so the Republicans have this kind of ulterior motive going. And I hate to say this, publicly, but it seems to me there's no other explanation for why they so blatantly and brazenly have turned their backs on the problem of jobs, and also have held the government up to this sort of extortion. I don't think the debt limit in the end will not be raised. That is, I think it will be raised. Moody's, the credit rating agency, Wall Street in general, big business, all of them who contribute mightily to the Republican Party, that is, Wall Street and big business, they want the debt ceiling raised. They don't want an economic calamity. So I think in the end it will be raised. And I think in the end Mitch McConnell's compromise or something like it will come into being. That is, Republicans will have, through some mechanism, a means of voting against raising the debt limit. The president will raise it nonetheless. The debt limit, at least until the election, will be raised. But you see, the public will not have the benefit of the leadership it needs to have on the jobs front. Right now, the president needs to be fighting for American jobs. We do have to have a WPA, a new Civilian Conservation Corps, exempting the first $20,000 of income from the payroll tax to put more money in people's pockets, amending the bankruptcy laws so homeowners who are distressed right now and behind their payments can declare bankruptcy on their primary residence, have more bargaining leverage with the banks. There are so many things that can be done and should be done to alleviate the pain and suffering going on right now that this entire game of chicken between Republicans and Democrats over the debt ceiling is a diversion, a digression, and it's a very shameful one.
Well, I know I had a rather confusing, long-winded question there, but to try and simplify it, I'm trying to understand what actual leverage the president has in the notion that the Republicans could get blamed for shutting down, not in this case shutting down the government, but essentially creating an economic crisis with the debt ceiling.
Well,
because the wreckage, in other words, it would be a Pyrrhic victory, wouldn't it?
I'll give you two, and I'll be brief. There are two points of leverage the president has. Number one, going into 2012, the Republicans do not want to be tarred with bringing the American economy down. And that's exactly what would happen if the debt limit were not raised and the full faith and credit of the United States were no longer any good. That would be a calamity, and it would be on the Republicans' heads because the president has put forward a plan to reduce the budget deficit. It's no longer about the budget deficit. It's about the Republicans' insistence on a smaller government, an ideological proposition that has nothing whatever to do with the budget deficit nor with raising the debt limit. And secondly, number two, pressure is growing from Wall Street and big business because the credit rating of the United States is affecting the cost of doing business, or will surely in a very short time affect the cost of doing business in the United States.
So do you think then it appears that the president's trying to use this leverage, who's going to blink? Because as I say, my concern is that the wreckage, even though you could blame the Republicans for it because they were the ones that precipitated this and pushed it to the limit, he's still going to be stuck with a bad economy through an election year, and people's memories aren't that long, and I don't know that that's going to work.
We've got to have some faith here that although some members of Congress play nothing but a cynical or ideological game, that there are leaders in both parties, and I think John Boehner, for example, is one of them. Mitch McConnell, in his proposal that he came up with a couple of days ago, is another. These Republican leaders understand the calamitous consequences of not raising the debt limit, and wise heads and responsible heads will prevail. Look, we're at a turning point in American politics, in the sense that if a small, ideologically empowered group that hates government can actually bring not only government to a halt, but the United States economy to a halt, then the problem we face is far beyond economics. then our entire democracy is really in shambles and essentially not working at all.
Well, we know that Boehner apparently and the president did make a deal over the last weekend, and that was scuttled by Eric Cantor, who also walked out on the meetings with Vice President Biden. The understanding that we have, and none of this is absolutely concrete information, but it's been widely reported, that the president is basically talking about a $4 trillion deal. And a part of that deal is that the Republicans have to relinquish their obsession with protecting the wealthiest 1% in terms of tax cuts. And my understanding is that that would bring in about $800 billion to a trillion in the Treasury. So I see already a tremendous imbalance. If the Republicans are going to contribute only $1 trillion and the president's prepared to cut $3 or $4 trillion, it seems like that's a bad deal.
Oh, it's a terrible deal. I mean, but the deal that the president offered the Republicans, $3 of spending cuts for every dollar of tax increase, would itself undermine major necessary entitlement programs such as Social Security and Medicare. It would cut funding for education for the poor. It would lead to dramatic sacrifices that we should not, as a country, have to make, particularly given that the richest among us, the top 1%, is taking home a higher percentage of the total national income than at any time over the last 80 years. And is facing a lower marginal tax rate than at any time since the 1930s. I mean, this is an absurd situation. And the fact that the president has made this offer is itself troubling enough. But for the Republicans to turn their backs on the offer and say, no, we won't even go that far, we don't want any tax increase whatsoever on the wealthy, is the height of absurdity. I mean, we've now reached the point where irresponsibility reigns. And we'll see. I mean, I have to have faith that John Boehner and Mitch McConnell are reasonable men, even if Eric Cantor and other members of the Republican establishment in Washington are ideologically driven.
Well, but what about the president? Is he too reasonable? In other words, is that stuff still on the table, or was he using it as a bargaining chip? And now they look like he looks like he's gone the extra mile, and they look like petulant teenagers.
Well, clearly, Ian, he has gone the extra mile. He has kind of done a Bill Clinton on them one step further. You remember that. When Newt Gingrich was the firebrand in 1995 and demanded a balanced budget and demanded this and demanded that, Bill Clinton came out sounding and looking very reasonable. He said, of course, I will go that far and I will accommodate what you want. We must not close down the government. And then Gingrich was blamed for closing the government down. Now, not raising the debt ceiling would have far graver consequences than closing the government down, because that would mean all Social Security payments would be suspended, unemployment insurance would be suspended, Medicare would be suspended, and we couldn't even pay our national debts to our national creditors. That would be a far worse situation. So you are absolutely correct in saying that the president has gone beyond the point of being a kind of a reasonable accommodation here. I hope it doesn't stay on the table. I hope that offer that he made was simply that particular offer at that particular time, because it cannot and should not be the offer that wins the day.
Well, you know, with $2 out of 10 in the American pocket coming from the government and from government programs, and them trying to cut government programs, everything is back to front now.
Let me make this even more dramatic.
Couple of seconds, yes.
Yeah, if the president's offer were accepted, the United States would have the largest fiscal contraction, that is, government contraction, of any country right now, beyond even what Britain is doing. And it would plummet us into another great recession, without any doubt.
I thank you so much for joining us here today, Robert Reich.
Thanks, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Robert Reich, who's the author of the new book, Aftershock, The Next Economy and America's Future. He has served in three national administrations, most recently as Secretary of Labor under Bill Clinton. He is the Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at the University of California at Berkeley. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking further about the economy.